Welcome to the Ortho Activist Podcast. I'm your host, Bradley Coffey, and I am the Manager of Government Affairs at the American Alliance of Orthopedic Executives. The episodes in this series will focus on the personalities in Congress, policy debates in the legislative and executive branches, and how they affect orthopedic practice management. The information contained in these podcasts comes from my interactions on Capitol Hill, as well as the newspapers, blogs, and websites covering healthcare policy. A quick note, if you have ideas for topics that you'd like covered on this podcast, please email AAOE's government affairs staff at advocacy@AAOE.net to provide suggestions.
To build a future of quality health care, we must trust patients and doctors to make medical decisions and empower them with better information and better options. We share a common goal: making healthcare more affordable and accessible for all Americans.
Now is the season for action. Now is when we must bring the best ideas of both parties together and show the American people that we can still do what we were sent here to do. Now is the time to deliver on healthcare.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining me for this episode of the Ortho Activist Podcast. Today's episode is all about the Stark Law. Stark is one of the three fraud and abuse laws that govern healthcare provider behavior under the Medicare and Medicaid programs. Stark governs the physician referral of services under the federal healthcare programs. The most notorious provision of this law is the ban on referring patients to designated health services in which the physician or a family member has a financial stake in. I'm joined today by Eric Christensen, who is the Director of Client Services at Healthcare Compliance Pros. Eric has more than 20 years of experience in healthcare, including in health IT administration. We're very excited that he's been able to join us today, and welcome, Eric.
Thanks, Brad. I'm happy to be here and happy to help the AEOE and the ortho activists.
Great. So let's just jump right in. How would you describe the Stark Law to someone who is new to practice management?
Well, it's all part of the whole anti-kickback, Stark, fraud, waste, and abuse. You know, those are the three that you're talking about. They work cohesively to try and mitigate abuses of federal dollars, really. So with regards to Stark, it's a matter of the relationship and referring patients and keeping patients within your network of services for which you're getting some kind of reimbursement. So you're not incentivizing patients, you're not incentivizing your employees, you're trying to make sure that it's open and the patients understand the relationships there and that you aren't being enriched by keeping or prescribing or ordering tests or other services that enrich you and that you're incentivized to be enriched by. Now, it doesn't have to be just you. It could be other financial arrangements with your hospitals, ambulatory surgical centers, DME, imaging. I mean, all of that comes under Stark and this concept of self-referral, within the fraud, waste, and abuse programs.
Great, thank you. So one of the things that we see a lot of in terms of Stark violations are what CMS terms technical violations. Can you explain what exactly a technical violation is?
Well, there are two types of violations under Stark. There are substantive and there are technical. Substantive, there is absolutely clear evidence that you or a provider ordered testing, ordered some type of ancillary protocol that enriched the provider in some way, that they got a kickback, if you will. But the technical violations, which are really the meat and where CMS is seeing the majority of the violations, is technical violations are ones that violate the law in a technicality. So in that way, they are, you know, the physician didn't understand his relationship or didn't disclose the relationship, didn't have a proper protocol in place, didn't have the proper service arrangements in place, and didn't document that correctly. Even though there weren't necessarily a violation, it didn't impact federal programs. No extra money was necessarily spent that shouldn't have been spent on this patient or service. but it wasn't disclosed the financial relationship that existed, or it wasn't documented correctly. And that's a technical violation. So it's a technicality is when we talk about these technical violations. And that's, you know, one of the majority of the violations as well. So I guess.
Great. So what would you say are the most frequent of these technical violations, or what have you all seen as being the most frequent?
Well, again, as I was leading into this, it's the majority of them are not properly documented financial arrangements. So, you know, they have an ownership in the ASC, but it isn't within the provider, because there are exceptions to Stark where a medical practice may own the ancillary services outright, and it's a closed loop, and there are exceptions. But if one physician has ownership in an ASC, or a couple of physicians have ownership in an imaging center, or they have a reimbursement arrangement from the hospital, or the hospital is partially paying for rent or inducing the practice to be in a specific physical location through rent subsidies. Those are things that are the technical violations. So the most frequent of those are just, you know, they didn't understand the relationship, and those are the technical violations. And a lot of times the physicians don't necessarily know all of the relationships that exist or aren't documenting those relationships. So that's the most frequent are ones that exist with just different types of ownership.
So I guess one of the scariest things that I would say Stark has is that you can violate the law and not actually know it.
Yes.
That's pretty frightening. So are there any specialties that are more prone to Stark violations?
Well, you know, we're talking about orthopedics. It is one of the larger ones because of all of the ancillary services that are part of the continuity of care especially with orthopedics and episodic care, where you've got an episode, you know, you've got a knee replacement, or you've got rotator cuff, you know, you're ordering imaging, you're ordering durable medical equipment, you've got physical therapy that may be ordered, you've got the surgery itself. And even if it's not within the ASC that some of the physicians may or may not own, the ASC is owned by the practice or not owned by the practice, then you've got the issue of, are you doing inpatient within the hospital itself? And do you have an arrangement for reimbursement with the hospital? And is it documented correctly? Those kinds of specialties where ancillary services are ordered. We see it with ENT docs and audiologists and fitting of hearing aids, and how does that work, and just anything where there are a lot of ancillary and moving parts, we see a lot. It can even happen in general practice. You know, we have general practitioners who are trying to collect as many dollars as they can, so they put in a lab and they're ordering their, you know, blood chemistry, and they're ordering all of those tests to capture the dollars. Now, if the lab is wholly owned by the practice, it probably is not a Stark violation, but those kinds of things where there are a lot of moving parts. So those kinds of specialties in orthopedics, you know, we're right here at ground zero when it comes to Stark violations.
So as part of the Bipartisan Budget Act of 2018, Congress clarified a couple of aspects related to the Stark law. Namely, Congress clarified that the signature requirement can be satisfied by signing a compensation arrangement within 90 days following the date of noncompliance. So in other words, missing that deadline to sign the agreement the day the agreement goes into force is no longer a violation. You have 90 days to correct a noncompliance violation. The law also allows for indefinite holdover lease and personal service arrangements. Do you think that these changes will help lower the rate of technical violations, or does it inject more uncertainty into complying with the Stark law?
Well, I think, I don't know if it injects more uncertainty. I don't think it alleviates too much of the uncertainty, because again, the 90 days, you have to identify that the arrangement, that you didn't document the arrangement correctly, that you didn't have the compensation agreement in place. Well, how many of the physicians or practice managers know 90 days after that we didn't have the correct compensation arrangement in place and it wasn't signed. So I don't know that it's going to lower the rate of technical violations, because if you're doing enough investigation within 90 days to determine that you should have documented before the onset, then you probably would have documented, you probably would have been asking those questions ahead of time. And that means that you would have to be auditing yourself and all of your arrangements continuously to know that these arrangements needed to be signed within that 90-day period. You know, so I don't know that it's going to reduce. Now, again, this signature requirement is part of that whole uncertainty that you talked about, Brian. It's the, I don't know if I have an arrangement in place. Should I have an arrangement in place? And I know we're going to talk about that in just a few minutes, but if they're not actively reviewing these financial arrangements and these compensation agreements and the ownership and how everybody within a certain practice is compensated based on ownership, if they're not reviewing that, I don't know that 90 days is going to help you. So I don't know that that's necessarily going to lower the rate of technical violations. I don't know that it'll lower the uncertainty, because again, if you were looking, then you would have caught it and more than likely caught it ahead of time anyway. And if you're not looking, you're not going to be, 90 days isn't going to help you either. That's the way I look at it.
Okay, so how can practice managers prevent violations of the Stark Law then?
Well, that just leads right into that, and that's making sure that you understand all of the compensation agreements, all of the ownership, all of the ancillary services, and how everybody is compensated for everything happening within your practice. And when I talk about orthopedics and I talk about it being ground zero for Stark, because of all of the different moving pieces, like I talked about, DME, physical therapy, ambulatory surgical, imaging, other ancillary services, it becomes more difficult to determine who has ownership, what the compensation arrangements are with the hospitals or health networks. And again, so knowing how to prevent those Stark violations is understanding each individual physician and how they operate and how they're compensated with every payer. And it doesn't have to be just the insurance payers. Are they being compensated in some ways, again, by the health networks, by the hospital systems? Do they have ownership, and who has ownership in those ancillary services? So if you're new to Stark, or you're trying to focus on Stark again, it's time to step back. It's time to step back and say, I need to look at the organizational structure. I need to look how these physicians are being compensated. And I need them to let me know where they're getting, you know, their 1099s. Are they getting any corporate documents from privately held corporations that they're getting reimbursed that I don't know about? Because the practice administrator isn't necessarily doing the taxes for the physicians. So what other compensation is the physician getting that may not even be running through the practice? Would be where I would start. But it's all about compensation. And again, technical violations don't necessarily mean that you are that you've done anything wrong with regards to federal dollars. Federal dollars aren't at stake. And what you need to look at with Stark, and we didn't talk about this at the beginning, Brad, but this is whistleblower. This is treble damages, and this is whistleblowers being compensated for reporting. So you do have exposure here, and you have to make sure that your employees understand that you're taking it seriously so that they're not looking at trying to be enriched by being a whistleblower and taking advantage of, again, these technical violations that didn't really involve federal dollars.
Yes, and thank you for bringing that up, Eric. I think it is important to note that Stark is a strict liability statute, meaning that all that's required for prosecution is that you violated the law. There is no requirement that intent be shown, that intent to violate the law be shown.
Yeah, and there doesn't have to be any dollars. I mean, it doesn't have. You don't have to actually have perpetuated any fraud or abuse of the program. The dollars could be the same. But if it wasn't documented correctly, it is a technical violation, and technical violations carry the same penalties as substantive violations. So that's why you can be violating this law very easily without even knowing it. And that's, I guess, moving on to our next question.
Yeah, thank you. So, you know, what should a practice manager do if they've discovered a referral arrangement that violates STARC?
Well, you know, they do have in the system a self-referral disclosure protocol. CMS has put this into place. It's supposed to alleviate the possibilities of damages. You can document that no funds were necessarily exchanged, or, and it didn't hurt the program, didn't hurt the federal dollars. And that's that self-referral disclosure policy. The other thing is to immediately document and correct that referral arrangement so that it does no longer violate STARC. But again, this moves back to the previous question about how do you prevent violations? Well, you've got to be examining those referral arrangements. And again, if you find a compensation agreement violate STARC, there is the self-referral disclosure protocol that is in place. And you can read about that on at CMS, how you document that, but close the loop yourself before making that disclosure. Before self-disclosing your violations, you want to make sure that you're close the loop yourself. But you can't close the loop until you found out that you have a violation. And again, you know, it's again working from the top down and understanding where the compensation and all of those agreements are in place.
Yeah, so I think the biggest takeaway is just know what's going on in your practice. At least that's what I'm getting. Yeah. So I just want to thank you so much for being with us today, Eric. That's all the time that we have for today. But, you know, this has been a very enlightening discussion, and we were happy to have you here.
Okay. Thanks, Brad. I appreciate it. Hope everybody out there has a great day.